This is Bob Fetrakis with The Other Side of the News, brought to you by thefreepress.org. WCRS Community Radio 98.3 and 102.1. Hi, this is Dr. Bob Fetrakis in the studio bringing you The Other Side of the News. I'm here with Mike Aaron, a driving park activist. This past week, there was a meeting between yourself and the state police. Did the police show up?
No, they didn't, Bob. At the at the last minute, around 3 o'clock, they canceled their appearance at the meeting in Driving Park. They said that I had misrepresented the character of the meeting, which is totally not true, and that the Lieutenant David Smith of the Highway Patrol said that he was uncomfortable sending out a representative to the meeting.
And how did you supposedly misrepresent it?
The reason for him coming out to the meeting was to just talk about the Highway Patrol's job and their mission in the neighborhood. And this is after he, Lieutenant David Smith, told me that there were no state police in Driving Park at all, which we know is not true as we have them on video.
All right, now if you have them on video, the Columbus Dispatch did an article suggesting that they had written hundreds of tickets area in the last 6 months. What's that figure?
We're talking between $84,000 and $104,000 out of the pockets of taxpayers and residents in Driving Park, the working class folk.
Okay, working class area. And they'll say they're allowed to enforce the law anywhere in the state, but mainly that the state highway patrol deals with highways and exits.
Absolutely. And that was our thought here in Driving Park. You know, we saw them, I noticed them probably back in November, and they would just kind of cruise through the area and said, hey, you know, state presence here in the neighborhood, not such a bad thing. It wasn't until the spring when the weather broke, you know, more active out in the area, that you saw them, the state highway patrol, pulling folks over at an alarming rate, more than I had ever seen any Columbus police officer pull folks over in our neighborhood. And on last Thursday, I was pulled over by a state trooper around 12 o'clock a.m. and told that I was speeding, which is totally not the case, as I saw the trooper in front of me, and as I passed him, he pulled up behind me. So what person in their right mind actually speeds in front of a state highway trooper? So they're out harassing folks in the community, looking for any and everything to pull them over. And of course, you know, if you have any little extra substance in the car, they're looking for it, and it's just an easy way to write more tickets and take more of our people to jail.
And what was their explanation? Have you gotten an explanation yet from the State Highway Patrol?
No explanation, just an admittance that they have been in the area. They have been patrolling and citing folks more than they should. We're talking 700 tickets since January, and there are only about 6,500 residents in Driving Park. 700 citations in Driving Park alone. And we have no figures, but this week we're going to be taking a look to see what the numbers are in Bexley and Eastmore and German Village, just to see, you know, if they compare, if there's any comparison between the two.
Because that's always the case in analyzing these things. Would the State Highway Patrol be able to come down there by Alum Creek off the expressway and suddenly start writing tickets in Bexley over on Main Street?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Of course, it's been argued that in Bexley, that the day you'll catch somebody pulled over who's not a college student or black will be the day
experience.
Of reckoning.
Yes, sir.
In Bexley. Bexley has long been thought to have overzealous police, but often seem to profile or target either the young college students that are there or people driving on the east side that lived in Columbus and Whitehall, and you knew because they were primarily people of color.
Sure, sure. Well, you know, State Highway Patrol has had that same, you know, that same identification almost as the major enforcer of traffic ticketing and citations in the state. You know, they like to get you. And when we saw them on the interior of our neighborhood, it just really became a concern for us. And after my pullover and the way it was carried out and talking with other folks, noticing how it was carried out. After the story broke initially on Wednesday, we heard from tons of folks in the neighborhood who had had these same experiences. I talked to a lady who lives now down near Rhodes, near the driving park itself, and she tells me a story of her husband being followed out from Livingston down to Rhodes and then down one of the side streets. And he actually pulls into his driveway, and the state trooper pulls up behind him at the driveway, pulls him over, and gives him a ticket for not having his seatbelt on. And the guy was just about to get out of the car, and it was a $95 ticket. And just the way she told that story, I absolutely believe that's the truth.
So what do you think they're doing in your neighborhood? Are they there to serve and protect?
They're here to serve, all right. Serve up some money to the state coffers. I mean, you know, Bob, I was asked by one media personality, do you think this is a racism issue? You know, no, I don't like to throw out the R word too easily. But I will say it's a class issue. You're down here in a working class neighborhood. Folks are just trying to put food on the table, make sure their kids have clothes coming up this school year. We're trying to pay bills down here. And it's easy picking. Some of these folks don't have the best cars. So you might have a taillight out or the light over your license plates, and it just makes it that much easier for the state police to pull you over and write up a few tickets. Trump up the charges, see what we can get. More money for the state, more recognition for the state highway patrol.
So what do you want the state highway patrol to do?
Well, now that they've come clean and admitted that they have been targeting our neighborhood, we've actually asked them, you know, because here's the thing. We would see them pass, you know, some prostitutes on Livingston and some dope dealers out there just to cite someone for a minor misdemeanor. And I spoke with the captain of the State Highway Patrol who oversees the Franklin County Division. And I said, you know, if you really want to do something in our neighborhood, we've got some crime initiatives we're working on. How about you partner with us and actually focus on the stuff that we find important instead of harassing our folks? And he seemed somewhat open-minded to the possibility, so we're going to see how this works. But they promised not to target the area.
Well, I read in the paper, and you were cited in that article, is that they've opened up these urban patrol centers.
Yes,
just
sir.
Recently. Could you tell the listeners about that?
Yeah. Traditionally, the State Highway Patrol has been located outside of the metropolitan areas, you know, outside of Cincinnati, outside of Cleveland, outside of Columbus. For the first time, a State Highway Patrol post has opened up in the Columbus area, and it's down at our neighborhood near Alum Creek and Universal. So the post opened up about a year ago, which, you know, would have fairly explained why we saw a heavier presence of the state police. And as I was quoted in the dispatch and on WBNS, we would expect an increased presence of the state police in the neighborhood at Alum Creek and Livingston by virtue of their location. And, you know, just because they're at that location, maybe you might pull over a few more people. But again, it's the focused concentration on the interior of the neighborhood, on side streets way far away from the freeway, that had us concerned the most.
And why were you concerned about that? I saw in the article they sound like they found one of the guys in your neighborhood that was saying, you need these state police
yeah.
in here to get these ruffians.
And that guy worked for the United States Postal Service.
Oh,
so
really?
So, you know, it's kind of like, well, okay, you don't even live in the neighborhood. You work in the neighborhood. And we're talking about
okay,
the folks.
Okay, I didn't catch that from the article. He doesn't live in the neighborhood?
Yeah, but he works in the neighborhood. He's the postal guy. Yeah, that's the guy, that's the gentleman who was quoted as saying he thinks it's a great idea that they're down there. But you talk to the majority of the residents, I assure you that they were not pleased and are very happy now to have the Highway Patrol exiting our neighborhood.
And if we talk about Driving Park, how long have you lived in the area?
15 years.
15 years. It also came up in other shows. For example, early on Election Day, it had over 200 people being forced to vote provisionally, and there was a huge sort of upheaval at the polls. I went down there and myself and demanded to know what was going on,
mm-hmm.
and all of a sudden it stopped. Why is Driving Park targeted by the state police, apparently targeted by the new Jim Crow advocates
mm-hmm.
who don't want people voting in the area? Why so much attention to the area where you live?
Well, you know, historically, our neighborhood was originally Jewish, Jewish majority anyhow. And in the 60s, as white flight took place, you had an increased presence of middle-class black folks, African-Americans, who moved into the neighborhood and essentially made it their own. And to be honest, it's one of the last few bastions of black middle-class participation that you have in the city of Columbus.
So similar to a Berwick than, say, the Mount Vernon area.
Absolutely, absolutely. More of a Mount Vernon than a Berwick, but with the beauty and charm of a Berwick. Yes, sir. Yes, sir. But, you know, I mean, and to be quite honest, it's a Democratic bastion. I mean, you have a concentrated number of folks who vote Democratic every election, and I thought to myself, and I'm speaking for myself, I thought to myself, what? It's almost as if these folks are being targeted from the state. You vote a certain way, you're of a certain class, a certain stronghold, and here you are being targeted by the state.
And suddenly the state police show up.
Yeah, yes,
and
yes.
That wouldn't be unprecedented. I would remind you of the 2000 election when, of course, in that election decided by a few hundred votes, really one vote, the U.S. Supreme Court, Bush v. Gore, stopping the recount, is that for the first time in memory, the Florida State Police decided they would go out and check for people driving church vans and limousines.
Interesting.
Shockingly, those vans happened to be from black churches, and stopped them and told them, asked for their limousine license. So they actually set up roadblocks, stopped church and religious vans coming in from black churches, and sent them back. Said the drivers, if they continue, would be arrested for driving without a limousine license. And again, the one of the people on the U.S. Civil Rights Commission, which had been appointed by, Bush at the time it was finally heard, said that, you know, let's use the C word here, conspiracy. Oh. How likely is it that the governor of the state, Jeb Bush, would suddenly decide on election day that every church van in black neighborhoods and every religious van needed to be stopped and harassed and ticketed and turned back? So you think there could be a possibility that Driving Park, a Democratic enclave, may be singled out? And it's also a way to extract money, right?
Yes.
The coffers are being filled, and for these state police, of course, to meet their numbers. I saw that in the paper. Is, well, they don't like to call them quota, but they talk about numbers up on the board, which is a code word for quotas.
And you know, that's the first thing that came to mind. And of course, that's the Highway Patrol, the state police, will never tell you that they have a quota system. But they do have another term for it, which I can't recall at this moment the name of it. But absolutely, the State Highway Patrol is a performance-based law enforcement agency. And again, what easier way to come down here at the order of someone? You know, I just can't imagine the troopers had this bright idea on their own to come down to Driving Park just to target this neighborhood. I just don't see it as a possibility. But again, there's no evidence, you know, proving that point. But again, history has told us that it's not unprecedented.
So when did they set up these urban posts? Under which governor?
This is under John Kasich.
So John Kasich, the governor of Ohio, decided that the state police should move into Cleveland, Cincinnati, and Columbus.
Mm-hmm.
And soon after moving in, you find them patrolling the streets of your neighborhood, a well-known Democratic enclave, and writing unbelievable amounts of tickets that enhances the state coffers.
Yes, sir.
Isn't it just a good way to balance the budget?
On the backs of the folks who, according to the state government, receive the most services. You know, just an easier way to extract that money. That's me, not them talking. Oh. But just my own theory. You know, according to the government, we're the folks, you know, sucking up all the tax dollars of these programs. So just let's get some of
that. Well, we're the other side of the news. We thought it was the four of the wealthiest families, including the Wolf, that took $250 million in casino tax money.
Jeez.
We thought they were taking the the welfare money. We thought it was Les Wexner when he got $100 million for water and sewage into New Albany. We thought those were the real people sucking up the services, you know, not people getting, you know, $100 in food coupons on a card.
Well, unfortunately, that's not going to be reported on the mainstream news that you have here in Central Ohio. Absolutely
well,
not.
Well, that's why we got the other side of the news. So let's look a little at your history. How do you get involved with this? It looks like you being stopped could have been a motivating factor. This is Bob Fetrakis. You're listening to WCRS 98.3 and 102.1. This is The Other Side of the News. I'm in the studio here with Mike Ahrens. Let's talk a little about your background.
I started on the Driving Park Area Commission in 2003, one of the youngest area commissioners at that time.
So you moved into the neighborhood when?
1995.
And you were underage then? Or?
Well, no. I was 23 years old at the time.
So you're 23 years old. Uh-huh. Where did you move from?
The north side of Columbus, up at Morris and Sunbury Road.
Which probably looks like a good move now.
Oh, gosh, the congestion up there, I can never move back to the north side.
So what possessed you to move into Driving Park?
Well, I was living with my parents at the time. I was 15 years old.
That's the old line by George W. Bush where, you know, they said, look, you've been living in Connecticut your whole life. How do you want to be governor of Texas? And he goes, well, I thought I needed to be close to her when I was young. So you moved with...
Mom and dad.
Yeah. But you're 23.
23. Hey, I'm working, trying to survive.
You could have got one of them old apartments up there at the Continent or something.
Could have. Could have, but you know, I like the character of the neighborhood. The character, the beauty of the neighborhood. And it's like a little Harlem down there. And Livingston Avenue is like our 125th Street. There's a lot of history in that neighborhood. Mm-hmm. And it's really a strong community, a strong working class community. Folks know each other. We love each other down there. And I couldn't really think of living anywhere else at this time.
Okay, so you're 23 years old. Were you politically active?
Not at the time. Read a lot, you know, read the newspapers a lot, did a lot of research on my own. There was an issue that came up down in Driving Park with the Flex Bathhouse that was going to reopen down there, and there's a huge controversy in Driving Park. And I went to one of the area commission meetings, first time I'd ever attended one, and my advice to the commission at that time was just be a little more diplomatic in the way that you talk about the Flex folks. I said, because if you explain yourselves in a certain kind of way, you're just going to come off wrong. And I sat back and I kind of watched the meeting go on, and I said, I could do this kind of thing. I've always been civic-minded, was class president in high school, involved in student council. So, you know, I was the weird teenager. I would sit during the summertime and watch C-SPAN and watch the House of Representatives in session and stuff like that. And I wasn't out kicking the ball. I'm watching the House. So politics has always been on the inside of me, and you know, I found an in right there.
So there's a certain amount of diplomacy. I know many activists in the black community, and sometimes we debate, because sometimes I'll say, well, there's the gay agenda. And I'm thinking, well, what do you exactly mean by that? And then always seems to come back to the Book of Leviticus.
Uh-huh. Yeah, absolutely. Old faithful right there.
Are you sure it's the gay agenda, or is it your religious feelings sort of getting in the way of a civil society? And I like to remind them that the Rainbow Coalition and the Rainbow Flag was created by none other than...
Reverend Jesse Jackson,
because I was there during the speech in 1983.
All right.
I was working for the Jackson campaign. Mm-hmm. And, of course, at the time, I was about 27 years old. And I went to the famous speech he made in Washington. He also addressed the Central American activists. He addressed two groups that, you know, were like outside the pale. Mm-hmm. Not only the gay rights, but Central American activists.
At that time, this is
justice.
Early 80s.
Wow. Yeah, 83. It's before 88. Uh-huh. And he made his famous, Rainbow Coalition. You know, they should be part of a much bigger coalition. But a lot of people don't recall that, don't remember it. Mm-hmm. It's sort of, they don't realize that really the idea came from one of America's foremost civil rights activists.
Well, short memory span. It's an epidemic here in
the
United States.
We like to call it the United States of amnesia.
Absolutely.
We can barely remember the Fourth Amendment, First Amendment, and the Eighth Amendment. And it's like, a long time ago, we didn't torture people. I think somewhere in the distance past.
Guy, pop culture is much more important in 2013, it seems. It's the music and entertainment industry. That's what gets news media folks going these days. The latest.
So you end up getting involved in politics in Driving Park. Did you join the Civic Association? Did you join the commission?
I joined the Driving Park Area Commission and served on that commission until 2008, when I became the chair of the newly created Livingston Avenue Area Commission. We took the Driving Park boundaries and expanded them, and actually picked up an additional three neighborhoods to create this cohesive collectiveness of civic associations along Livingston Avenue. And really, it's formed a lot of great partnerships amongst the neighbors. It's a lot more communication. We have the same issues. Why are we broken up so much? Let's pull together and work together. So it was a really great experience. Served on the commission 8 years altogether.
Do you have a Black Watch?
Yes, we do. Driving Park Black Watch down there.
Now, I've been involved in the Otina Black Watch, and there also was a Black Watch. We had briefly up in the Bryden area, Old Town East Black Watch in that area. And the Black Watch, of course, has come up because of Mr. Zimmerman in this situation. Yes. And I don't know. I keep thinking, when I was training on the Black Watch, the first thing is you couldn't have a gun.
Absolutely.
And the
not.
Second thing, you had a walkie-talkie or a transmitter or a phone, and you called the
police. Yeah.
Right, I mean, you weren't supposed to. And also, in the Black Watch, you worked minimum in pairs. I never heard of this one guy with a gun.
It's not
Black Watch.
Yeah, it's not recommended by the police department at all that you go out there and,
I know.
Not at all.
They have manuals and trainings
real
on this.
Real training,
I've never heard of, hey, put one guy in a car with a gun, and if somebody doesn't know, passes by, stalk them.
Stalk them and confront them, even after being told by the radio dispatcher not to follow this guy, not to follow this kid that's out there. So, totally against all Black Watch procedures right there.
So what's going on in your neighborhood right now? You're still working with the Civic Association?
Yeah, my term ended with the commission back in 2011, and currently I'm working with the Driving Park Civic Association. Currently, we have a lot of great programs happening. We had the Harmony Project down in our community earlier this year in the spring, put in 100 trees in the neighborhood, built a beautiful new sculpture down in Livingston and Nelson, created artwork panels that span all of Livingston.
So you are taking this Harlem model seriously.
Oh, yes, sir. Yes, sir. Yes,
it's
sir.
And Driving Park Renaissance?
just trying to celebrate the history of the neighborhood. You know, a lot of different folks have lived there. We can celebrate all of it together.
So, the history of the neighborhood, but you told me it was a majority Jewish neighborhood.
Back in the 60s, from the 30s to the 60s, actually the house that I bought back in 2009 was owned by a sort of a Yankee trader, but an old comic store with a lot of party favors and whatnot. It used to be down on North High Street. But the folks that built my house in 1939 used to own the same type of store in Parsons Avenue. So a lot of small business owners in Driving Park. It was the to-do neighborhood of its day. And still is, really.
And it was called Driving Park because?
There used to be a racetrack down in Driving Park near my house, actually, built in 1892. And you'd have the Kelton family and the Miller family and all the well-to-do folks of that era travel down to Driving Park in their horse carriages and watch the horse races. And eventually, Eddie Rickenbacker raced race cars at Driving Park. He used to live down on Ellsworth and near Livingston. So a lot of history down in Driving Park.
And where's Driving Park headed today?
It's stable. It's a stable community. We have a lot of new families moving into the neighborhood. It's an artsy neighborhood, and it's really having its renaissance right now. Children's Hospital, a major employer in the neighborhood, has invested millions of dollars into helping us rehab some homes down there. Many homes available for sale, gutted from studs, and there's a lot happening. It's really a place that folks should check out. Just had a new restaurant open up down there, 2D's Restaurant. It used to be the old Donut Hole, very popular spot in Driving Park. So we have a sit-down restaurant opened up, new library coming to Driving Park, a lot of new things happening down there. What we don't need, as we talked about earlier, is the state police down there harassing our folks and violating their civil rights down there, adding an additional tax of over $100,000 onto the backs of these folks down there.
In a short period of time, maybe it was a unannounced levy from the governor.
Well, you know, let me tell you, when I was talking with the police captain, he asked a few times, and actually, after our first conversation, he called me back 5 minutes later to verify whether or not I planned on filing an official complaint with the state. He was very concerned about that. And my response to him was, well, at this time, I can't tell you what I'm going to do, but I reserve the right to file the complaint at a later date. You know, we'll just see how you guys play along with us right now. But, you know, they're obviously concerned, and my thought in that,
well, worse than the complaint, it was on the front page of
the Metro section of the Columbus Dispatch.
The
you know, here's the thing. I wondered to myself, just based on history, based on what we know, could there be more to this? I wonder, is this happening up in Cleveland, you know, an even stronger Democratic
Yeah, whether there's a pattern in practice. Oh, that sounds like a civil rights violation.
Absolutely.
A pattern in practice of targeting
minorities,
minority neighborhoods,
yes,
that also voted overwhelmingly Democratic.
Uh-huh. Absolute possibility, and it's something that I can't say for sure, but we might take a look at. I think it'd be well worth our while to take a look at that.
How are the city services in the neighborhood?
Extremely well. You know, I can say that.
They should be, because it tends to vote
Democratic. And as well as they should be. And
I'm going to have to look at my vote total as a green. I'm not sure. Actually, I think it was South Bexley, which was the area most. I only got 2.2% of the vote running for Congress as a green, but there's little clusters.
Bexley folks out there supporting you.
South Bexley, not North Bexley, not the rich area of Bexley.
South Bexley. Could that be capital there?
Yes, exactly.
Uh-huh.
And so, I mean, actually, your neighborhood's not that far from capital, right?
Not far at all. We're about 5 minutes around the corner from it. Could easily bike it if we wanted to.
And when you look at something like Livingston, do you see the recreation of an entrepreneurial, small business, diversified strip?
Things were headed that way.
Thoroughfare?
Yeah, things were headed that way on the Livingston Avenue corridor before the economy went south. And slowly we're seeing the resurgence of such. Again, as I said, we have a new restaurant that opened up a few months ago. So that is
and
really...
And what is Tooties? Why do people like...
Well, Southern cuisine.
Southern cuisine.
Southern cuisine, wonderful breakfast. It's open 6 to 3 at the corner of...
Meaning grits?
Grits, greens, beautiful, wonderful...
No, I'm from the north, I don't understand.
Wonderful
grits.
Breakfast.
I understand greens, but I've never understood grits.
Wonderful breakfast sandwiches covered in wonderful cheese, layers of cheese and bacon and
but is
and
it really Southern unless there's like waffles and chicken?
Chicken and waffles, absolutely.
It does, okay.
Chicken and waffle place. Yes, yeah.
I remember the first time I went down to Atlanta, and every place I went, it's like
chicken and waffles.
Waffles for breakfast.
Right here in Driving Park. Great place. So, yeah, that's the ultimate goal, to have a lot of entrepreneurs along Livingston Avenue. Originally, that's what was there 60 years ago, and really that's what holds a neighborhood together, are folks who live in the area and actually work in the area.
So how do you plan to proceed with the state police?
Well, again, we're going to take a look at some of the numbers this week, compare them to the surrounding areas, see what the number, the variance is between the number of tickets and the varying communities, and possibly even take a look at Cleveland and see if they're having this same problem. It's interesting that after, on Thursday, the Perry Township Lieutenant, upper northwest side of Columbus, near between Worthington and upper Arlington, there was an interview on Channel 10 with this lieutenant from Perry Township who had the same complaint as we had down here in Driving Park. So it shows that they're not just focusing in Driving Park, but specific pockets in the Columbus area.
Well, there's one pocket of it's Clinton Township that seems to be poor. I'm wondering, you know, what's the mall? Kingsdale, but there's also another area. It's non-separate that heads out east as well. So it'd be interesting to see if they're targeting some of these white working class area.
Well, I can say that last night around 11 o'clock, I saw a highway patrolman pull someone over near the corner of Broad and James. It was maybe a block south of Broad and James. And I drove by, took a picture of the cruiser, and just kind of said, I'll keep this, I'll add this to the other data that we've collected. So they're still out there. They're just not in Driving Park anymore.
That's right.
And that was the only promise made by the
You're
State
have
Highway
to
Patrol.
You're going to find a more mixed neighborhood to a Whitehall black and white thing.
Less
There's
criticism
some working maybe. Class white people out there that need harassing along with black working class people.
Good stuff.
So how much time we got left? In the last minute, anything you'd like to say to the listeners here at WCRS?
You know, I'd just like to say to everyone who's listening to this radio program to just try to be more vigilant. When you see something that's happening out of place, out of character, don't be afraid to speak up. Ask the questions that need to be asked. Make that phone call to your local police department or your local politicians, you know, whichever level of government that might be. But, you know, it really takes folks who live in the neighborhoods to fight for themselves sometimes, you know, to stand up for your rights, to stand up for the rights of other folks. You know, I've always believed that if you stand up for other folks' rights, yours will always be protected in the meantime.
All right, and we'll have to tell the NSA that. So again, this is Bob Trakis bringing you the other side of the news. Thanks a lot, Michael Aaron.
Thank you, Dr. Bob.